Speaking of reliability, friends talking about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Carl Carlson.
And this is Fred Schenkelberg. And this is part three of a three-part series. So those that are regular listeners have hopefully already enjoyed the part one and part two of these three principles of reliability engineering. And today we're going to talk about the third part, which is integrating reliability into or with the development process. And we'll expand that on in a minute. If this is really your first time listening to us, welcome. We really appreciate it that you took some time to give us a listen. The show is really about talking shop, essentially. I think Carl and I live in different parts of the country, along with many of our co-hosts. We're all scattered around. And we've enjoyed talking to each other at conferences when we have the chance. And so we continue this discussion, and we'd like to include you. If you have some ideas or comments or suggestions or questions for us, we'd love to hear from you. So head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR and join the conversation. So back to this third principle, Carl. If maybe a quick summary of where we've gone with all three of these, and then we'll dive into the third one.
Sure. The first topic was the calculating reliability as a skill, and it can be very important to use that skill at the right times, but achieving reliability is even more important. And so we want to keep the focus on the methods and tools and activities that achieve reliability, and then balance that with calculating where appropriate. That's the first principle. The second principle is a must. In order to achieve reliability, reliability must be designed into products and processes. Given the short product development timeframes we have, the fast to market initiatives, it's impossible to achieve high reliability in a very short amount of time without achieving reliability in design. You just don't have the time to test and fix before launch. And the third principle is that reliability must be integrated into the product development process. And in this case, we're talking about, and this is a company-wide effort, part of the culture of the company, is quality and reliability becomes part of everybody's job in a certain way. But it's going beyond just the platitudes that, yes, I pledge to achieve quality and reliability. In this case, we're saying, let's get it into the work instructions of the employees. Specifically, what do they do? And get it into the gates of the product development process. Specifically, what are the contributions and inputs from reliability to each of the stage gates, and get it specifically into the project teams accomplish the different new projects. What is their role in achieving reliability? So it's very much a roles and responsibilities topic.
I think it goes a little bit beyond just being in the phase gates or different expectations. And you mentioned culture, and I really emphasize that. You could have reliability spelled out in an extensive checklist, for example, that these are all the things you need to do and not do and so on. And you're running around running all these tests or doing all these studies or doing all this analysis. And you may feel like you're doing reliability as an organization. Yet if it's still reactive, you're not doing it effectively. It's really you need to mature as an organization, and it's across the culture. It's not just the reliability team, and it's not just the management team, it's not just the design team. It becomes part of the DNA. It becomes part of the culture of, this might be a risk. Let's understand this some more. Let's understand how the variability of these components affect the performance of our product in the field. And that conversation may or may not include a quality or reliability person. It just happens, and it's proactive. The culture of any organization is going to achieve some reliability. And it could be really, really bad, or it might be actually pretty good. What I found is consistent, though, is organizations that proactively think about and consider reliability throughout the process, through not just the development process, but throughout their organization, tend to consistently create very reliable products. And I also found that they may or may not have a reliability professional on staff. It's not a requirement that you have a reliability team. Yet, if the team knows, oh, we have some uncertainty here, there may be some risks, let's do an FMEA to expose that and break it down a bit so we can work on the appropriate part. Or, hey, we need to do an accelerated test on this. There's enough uncertainty before we pick a vendor. Let's understand this. And they may get some support from a statistician to go track that down and sort it out and so on. But I think it goes well beyond that. It's a part of the product life cycle, because I've seen plenty of them, Carl, where it's listed and then nobody pays any attention to it, right? So it's got to be more than just on the wall.
Yes, I would say if there's not a reliability professional on staff, then the management has to be quite well enlightened as to reliability management and processes. I've always coached my reliability teams that we're trying to work ourselves out of a job. Mm-hmm. We're trying to transfer the body of knowledge of reliability to the organization, to infuse it into their work so that they conduct their business from a reliability point of view, in addition to cost, in addition to performance, in addition to weight and materials and whatever other initiatives they have. They consider reliability at every, like you say, at every decision that is made. And it becomes part of the culture, but by being part of the culture, it becomes part of their job responsibility.
Right.
This can get very specific. I've seen some companies, and I've worked with companies, that have gotten inside the work instructions of all the different employees and put in specific roles and responsibilities that relate to reliability. Mm-hmm. In their work instructions. If you can get that in a seamless, meaningful way, that's where the rubber hits the road.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking of an example of that is when I was working at Hewlett Packard, one of the attributes that they looked for employees that were going to be promoted through the technical ranks in particular is that other people went to them. And one of the areas that we found most technical fellows had was, one, a deep understanding of some particular, thread of technology, and like polymers or ceramics or some material-based immense depth of knowledge. But it was also their ability to integrate it with the reliability aspects. The technical fellows tended to share what worked and what didn't work, because they had already experienced all these dead ends before. And oftentimes, and especially in a product development group or organization, is you don't want to waste a bunch of time reinventing the problems that the limitations of material sets we're dealing with. And likewise, being available or to see the opportunities for breakthroughs on that and opportunities there. That the ability of the technical fellows was part teaching, was part sharing knowledge. And a big part, what I noticed, was that it was reliability knowledge and quality knowledge that they shared about the particular field they had. They didn't expect everybody else, if they were a polymer scientist, they didn't expect everybody to be, postgraduate degrees in polymer science, yet understand that the decisions they make impacted the performance of those products. And here are the guideposts that were often reliability lessons.
This is really a topic that we could section off into its own episode.
But
the The quote that I remember, of one of my favorite quotes, is experience is the name people give to their mistakes. Mm-hmm. And the well-experienced person is very valuable in a company. And if you can go beyond just the verbal transfer of knowledge and develop good design guides,
right?
That is a huge part of integrating reliability into the product development process. Because if you're making bearings, then there are design guides that can support the design of bearings so that the bearings are reliable. And the same as transmissions, same with any widgets, mm-hmm. Design guides can be an important part of a good product development process. And that's where you take these fellows and the gurus and the very experienced people, and if we can get them to debrief their experience and work with the appropriate teams to get design guides made, that's a big step.
Yeah, and I think it's this overlaps to my way of understanding these three principles with the second one. You know, you need to design it in. And a part of that is enabling the design teams to not make the same mistake again, essentially. So the design guidelines and the product lifecycle and the touchstones that can be a scaffolding to help them be aware of and make appropriate decisions and have the information to help them make those decisions. How much does it cost for a product when it fails? How do you translate a failure mechanism into how many units that's going to affect? How do we understand when we need to do an accelerated test, or how do I interpret a vendor's claim? I think those are parts of that principle too. Principle three makes it so that it's already there. It's part of, they're going to look for it. It's part of the culture to understand that those resources, and here's how I use them, and how do I use them effectively.
And to use the new word that is used a lot, it's not a new word, but it shows up more in mission statements, is sustainable. Mm-hmm. The effort will become sustainable if it's integrated into the culture and integrated into the job descriptions. What comes to mind to me also is what is called RASI charts. Mm-hmm. If I remember, it's responsibility, approval, support, and I forget what the I is. It'll come to me. But those kind of charts can really help if you're working on, if you're saying, how do we integrate reliability? Well, then let's take the different tasks that need to be done, like we have to do a system reliability model, or we have to do whatever it is, and work out the RASI. Mm-hmm. Because you don't want the reliability engineer doing these things on their own, because that's the definition of pushing on a rope.
Right. And I agree that the transition of a culture into an integrating reliability, and it does take that set of structure and so on. And that's a tough part. We talked about it in the last episode, the soft skills, but this is oftentimes beyond the reliability engineer's ability to implement the change in culture. You really need the champions at various points in the organization, up and down the organization, the thought leaders in the organization to help promote the culture. And then tools like the RASI charts and others are structures that we can put in place to make it clear. Here's where all those connections are. If you're doing a system model, well, who's the audience for that? Who needs to contribute to it? Who are all the stakeholders? And it's a good size list, if you think about it.
It is a good size list. Yeah. Now, you probably can't see this where you are, Fred, but I'm really smiling here because I'm thinking back to what we used to do when I was in vehicle engineering, and every couple of years, you'd have like a new management would rotate in, mm-hmm. and we'd have to... myself and a couple of my colleagues that were around the block for a while, we'd have to trot off and go out into their office and teach them reliability principles, teach them what we know that they need to do, mm-hmm. in order to support us. And they were very open to it, but in some cases it was new. And I just remember that rotating executive level that would, by design, the executives would go into different positions, and then suddenly one would be in charge of reliability or certain type of engineering, mm-hmm. and we would try to educate them, keep them educated. So there is something you can do to, if you look at from the, what do you want management to do? Yeah. And then teach them what you think they need to know about the subject of reliability in order to be supportive.
Right.
That's what I was smiling about.
So did you ever feel like you got to the tipping point where the management teams that you were, you know, new folks coming in were already on board, that the rest of the management team, their superiors and so on, were already carrying that torch for you?
There was one era, and I won't mention any names here, but there was one area where one of the executive directors and their management, which was VPs, were very enlightened. We had done good training. We had had good collaboration. There were successes. Mm-hmm. They were focused on DFR. They were focused on all of the things that we're talking about. And that era lasted for a while, and then it unraveled when the people got transferred.
Yeah, it's I've seen it where a senior manager gets it and understands it and just sucks you dry of all the information you can provide them, so that they mm-hmm. are better at carrying that idea along and building that culture within an organization. And when I've had a couple of times where those folks get promoted and they expand that influence, and they just set the expectation that whoever is in that new position or other areas are supporting that function also get it, and it sets that expectation and it helps. I found that at some point you get this returning good karma around reliability, mm-hmm. for the lack of a better word for it.
It's like critical mass.
Yeah, exactly. So I think big part of what we're trying to do here, Carl, with the podcast and these three principles, is build critical mass across all of your industries, all of our listeners' industries. And here's a few ideas, a couple key principles to keep in mind as you go through it. These last couple of episodes hopefully give you some insight into those. You can also find more in Carl and I talked about it before we started recording, is that we needed to make it more prevalent in the book we're working on reliability engineering management. And you can take a look at the drafts at ascendoreliability.com/go/REM. And while you're over there, flip over to the page, ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR, and let us know what you think about the podcast or these topics or what you'd like to see going forward, and essentially join the conversation, both with the book and with the podcast. We'd really love to hear from you. So, Carl, I hesitate, but I was taking notes about how I phrase all three of these things, but I think you make it sound so much more positive.
Well, sure, and of course we have to summarize it, but
right.
I think the first principle is the calculating reliability versus achieving reliability. And we could summarize it that way. And mm-hmm. we're going to focus on achieving reliability is the answer. And so we'll characterize it that way. And the second one is the essential of designing for reliability. In other words, reliability must be designed into products and processes. And the third is reliability must be integrated into the product development process to be long-term effective. And I think if people can keep those in mind in everything you do, they could be very helpful.
Yeah, well said. Yeah, I'm thinking of my three, and they're not near as positive, but I think they're shorter and make better bumper stickers. But I'll keep that to myself for now. All right.
Okay.
So no, I totally agree, Carl. So appreciate it, and we look forward to our audience to do your input and ideas. Is there a fourth principle out there you would like to add to this? We'd be very interested in that. And, you know, it could be right there in front of us and we just don't see it. So we'd appreciate some help there. So with that, Carl, I guess we'll wrap this up.
Okay, thanks, Fred.
All right.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.